Hi there, this is Alan Tudyk. I'm Wash. And at times I will wash myself just when I get dirty. This is Hypeable Podcast. Talk about Firefly, why don't you?
Welcome, everybody, back to the next episode of Rewatchable, a podcast from Hypeable.com, where we're going to be rewatching some of our favorite TV series and trying to get some people into what maybe they haven't ever had a chance to watch before, or to go back and rewatch it and rediscover how much they loved a particular series. Right now, we're starting with one of my all-time favorite series, which happens to be Firefly, which was canceled way too soon. And just to give you a recap on how you can get in touch with us, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Rewatchable, which is RE_watchable. You can also shoot us an email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Or over at hypeable.com, hypable.com, you can always comment on any of the posts regarding the podcast, too. So please get in touch with us. We love fan feedback and happy to discuss what you want to discuss. So before we begin, why don't we just introduce who is on the podcast this time? I am Laura, and I wasn't here last time, so I'm really excited to finally be discussing this with everybody. And I'm also being joined this week by...
Hi, Karen here. I'm one of the fans of Firefly, excited to do the second episode.
I'm Caitlin. I'm the other fan of Firefly, also very excited to do the show.
And I'm Kristen, the resident newbie who has only watched one episode of Firefly ever.
And we're glad to have all of them back. We also, unfortunately, don't have Tarek on with us this week, but Tarek did send us some comments in. He is off in England right now having a whole lot of fun, but he was really excited to jump in on this too. So I'm sure we'll have him back on for another episode of the podcast. So just to briefly recap, the episode that we're going to be talking about this week is actually the first episode of the series, which is the pilot, Serenity. And just to give a brief recap of what the pilot was about, the pilot begins with seeing Mal and Zoe at the Battle of Serenity Valley, where the rebels lost to the Alliance. And then you fast forward 6 years later and you discover that Mal and Zoe are still together in a relationship that basically they're smugglers and they have a crew of this sort of ragtag vessel that's sort of held together with, you know, bubble gum and paper clips practically. And we get to meet the very interesting crew that is aboard Serenity, which would be Kaylee the mechanic, Jane, who is basically the ship's muscle, you could say, the ship's enforcer. We have Wash the pilot, who happens to be married to Zoe. And then during the course of the episode, we get to meet some of the characters that are going to be with us for the rest of the series, and they come on as passengers. Oh, almost forgot Inara. Inara, who is the companion, which is an interesting title, which we'll get into eventually, and she is sort of a regular crew member, sort of a passenger. It's an interesting relationship. But then later on in the episode, we see Simon and River come on board. We also get to meet Shepherd Book, and the whole series kind of just kicks off and spirals from there. Also notable in this episode, we get to meet the character of Badger. Badger is who they were going to be delivering some smuggled goods to. And basically Badger had to renege on the deal, but he's a great character and we're going to see him again. So I think it was a really awesome introduction to that character. Thinking about our episode itself, what do you guys think in regards to it? Is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down for a pilot episode? Is this an episode that makes people say, oh my gosh, I really want to get committed to this series? Or for a pilot, could it have been done better? Why don't we start with our newbie here? How do you feel about how this episode came off, Kristen?
I think it did a really good job of introducing the characters, because at the very beginning when they're in Serenity Valley, and I know that like the movie Serenity is kind of tied into Firefly, so I knew that was, you know, kind of like a theme, like that had to have been the ship's name or something. Like I was going to, you know, figure that out. But they did a really good job of kind of giving you a nice taste of what each character is about and what, you know, what kind of role they're going to play in this ragtag group of space cowboys. And so I really, really enjoyed the pilot. I thought it was really, really well done for a pilot, because a lot of times things are missing or something just doesn't quite feel right. And I really liked it.
I know when I first watched it, I wasn't all that impressed. Not that I didn't like it, but it wasn't anything that really blew me away. It took a couple of episodes for me to really start getting into the series, but it was interesting enough to keep me watching. But rewatching it now, I'm a lot more appreciative of the nuances that are in there. And I found myself just enjoying the pilot episode a lot more than I did the first time around.
Yeah, I would say that maybe the first time I was kind of expecting it to be maybe a little more action-packed, but all the slower moving parts were very important character moments, which when handled by Joss Whedon are pretty brilliant, so I'm totally fine with that. And looking back at it now, I can totally see how the pieces come together, and I'm able to appreciate the character dynamics as they're established.
Yeah, I have to say, I just rewatched again this morning, and definitely, I totally agree with what you're saying about how Joss Whedon is such a brilliant writer, and get these little nuggets of information about each character, either what they say or how they interact with people, and they're brief. All you need to know about that character in like 30 seconds, or at least as a jumping off point, which I think is so critical. I know for me, the other thing that I thought today too, as I was rewatching, you know, this takes place obviously in outer space in the future, and I'm watching, you know, the part where they're in the vessel and they're salvaging the equipment, and obviously this thing did not have a huge budget. And it looked pretty good, like the weightlessness in space, like I don't know how they filmed that, but it did not look cheesy. Like to me, I felt like it really looked pretty good as far as them in the spacesuits and the way they moved. And I don't know, how do you guys feel about that visual imagery? For a pilot episode especially, I thought that was pretty good because I could have gotten turned off right there.
Yeah, I was not at all thrown off by them, like the spacewalking, like you were talking about. A lot of times that can look cheap really, really easily. And to be honest, I didn't even think about it. Like, and for a pilot to do it that well is pretty impressive.
And for as old as it is, it looks really good.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's 10 years old. I mean, for it, and not that that's like ancient, but the fact that it still holds up imagery-wise a decade later is absolutely pretty impressive. I just wanted to put Tarek's two cents in because he emailed us to tell us what he thought about the first episode, and he said it's a thumbs up for him on the episode. He really enjoyed the second half a lot more than the first. He said, I actually had forgotten a lot of the key moments points since the first time I tried the pilot. Even though it wasn't technically my first time, I felt like it, and I'm glad I pulled through the whole thing. I look forward to seeing how the series goes on. And when Kaylee got shot, I was wondering if this was going to be the type of show to kill off characters easily and freely, such as Vampire Diaries or Game of Thrones, or this will be the type of show where everyone always survives. I thought that was kind of an interesting comment of Tarek. I mean, obviously it only lasted a season, so you kind of wonder what would have happened if they had more characters and had more chances. You know, would they have killed people off more freely than they did or not? But it is, it's, I think it was pretty cool that they did put a major character in jeopardy really on, and a major character who is so likable, because I think Kaylee is probably one of the most likable characters in the series.
I was immediately drawn to Kaylee. Like, it's the first time we met her, I was like, oh my god, I love her. And then she got shot and I was like, no. So it already had me cheering for them.
Maybe this is a good time just to seg into character discussion of the characters, because we have so many and they're such rich characters. Who are some of our favorite characters? I know I'm always torn. Like, one minute I feel like I love one person and then I love the next.
My favorite character is Simon. Watching the pilot again is interesting with Simon because he starts off and you don't know what to think of him. He really looks kind of sleazy, and when you know, everyone thinks he's initially the mole that's on board, so you're very wary of him, but it quickly becomes apparent that he's actually a really decent guy who's just a bit awkward, and he and River have the most fantastic sibling relationship, so I adore Simon.
Yeah, mine, I really, really, really like Kaylee. I don't know. There's something about her. When I first saw her on screen, I was like, oh my God, I love that girl. But I'm also already a Wash fan. And I know that he's one of the more beloved characters, so I'm sure I will love Wash just as much as everyone else.
Yeah, Kaylee is definitely a favorite for me. I love Inara. I think she's a really interesting character. Wash is definitely a favorite. It's funny because in this first episode, I really didn't like Simon all that much, like just looking at the first episode. But once you get later into the season, he definitely becomes one of my favorites. And one of the things I really like about all of these characters, especially I would say Mal for sure, but all of them to an extent, is that they're so three-dimensional and so real that you kind of like them and dislike them at the same time. They're like real people. It's not, I mean, Kaylee is easy to like, and a few of the other ones are really easy to like, but some of them are a little shady. Some of them make bad decisions. I mean, I like Jane, but even later on in the season, you know, sometimes you just kind of want to throttle him because he's just making dumb decisions. But overall, I'd say I like pretty much everyone on the show.
For me, I agree with you, Karen, that everybody is so unique and they're so flawed. Like, there's no just like the good guy character. Like, they all have their demons. For me, I really love Inara because I love how smart and quick on her feet and how she doesn't take guff from anybody, but at the same time she's really human, and you may think she's just totally tough, but she does have a side of her that can be really easily wounded. And I think we saw that a bit in the pilot, how she's there as a companion and she's just been with a guy and she's been really sweet and really, you know, loving to him, and you think this guy is kind of like really innocent and nerdy, and then he says, oh yeah, you probably rigged your clock to so we could get out of our fun quickly. And you can just see it read on her face for a second, like, you know, how that kind of dehumanized her. And I really love Inara for everything she brings to it, because she's just a wonderful character to me. Any characters that we really disliked of the bunch? I know that's sometimes it's hard to have an appreciation for one character. I know I have one that I've always tried, and I've never really liked a particular character. How about you guys? Is there anybody in on it so far that you're like, ugh? I think somebody mentioned Simon they weren't real happy with at the beginning. Anybody else? Somebody they're not really a fan of?
I'm not the biggest fan of, I believe it's Jane.
Yeah.
Like, kind of the muscle guy.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like a love-hate relationship, because I see his worth and everything, but as of right now, he's not on my favorites list.
People are probably going to hate me for this, but I am not a Wash fan. I know I'm like in this total minority about that. He's like okay, but he's just not, I don't know, he's too goofy for me. And I know he's like really skilled and he's a really good pilot and he's really nice, but he's just a little too goofy for me. So I am not a huge Wash fan.
My jaw just dropped, Laura.
I know, we're going to get so many comments on this, I know, because like Wash is everyone's favorite.
I think I like him so much because he is goofy. He sort of lightens up the show a little bit. I mean, Mal is funny too, but he's more funny in a sort of like degrading way, whereas I just really enjoy how goofy Wash is. I always like seeing him on screen.
I'm with you, Karen. I'm always drawn towards the goofy, sarcastic, like kind of the little pain in the butt character. That I'm always drawn to those. So I'm pretty sure that's why Wash kind of made an impression on me right away, but we'll see.
I think Wash's relationship with Zoe adds a lot to his likability factor for me, because there's obviously something more there for someone like Zoe to be so in love with him.
That's a really, really good point. And at the end of the episode, you do see Zoe saying to Mal, sir, I need you to take over the ship, because this man has to come and tear my clothes off. You know, so you get the point that it's not all just Mal controlling every single moment of Zoe and Wash's life. Like, she does like have some autonomy over what she does and says. Part of what you were just mentioning there was kind of that goofiness, and part of, there are some things that maybe are a little goofy or potentially a little corny in regards to this series. First of all, it's a space western, which some people might find a little goofy or corny conceptually. And then secondly, there's the way that Chinese and Asian influence kind of comes through the series. So what do you guys think in regards to, well, maybe we'll start off with the space Western at first. Tarek was disappointed that there were no space tumbleweeds. But what did you guys think? Were you on board with that concept right away, or did it take a while for it to grow on you?
I actually really enjoyed it right away. I think it's cool, and it's a nice change from the high gadget, high tech sort of sci-fi shows and movies that we usually get. I feel like this is a lot more realistic approach to that genre.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm a big fantasy fan. I'm not always so much a sci-fi fan. Like, I mean, and this is going to sound funny because everybody knows I'm like the huge Doctor Who fan. But I think it's for exactly the reasons you're saying, is that when you get to Doctor Who, it's not always about all the robots and the high-tech gadgets. It's, you know, the people and the humanity of it. And I think that's what this is. It's, you know, they're on an outpost. They're exploring new realms. So, yeah, they have the spaceship, but the planets are so new.
I know for me, the space Western concept was what kept me from watching the show for a really long time. I'd heard a million good things about it, but I love sci-fi and I hate Westerns and have just could not bring myself to watch it. But then almost immediately just found myself totally taken by it. It's just there's such a dissonance between the two topics that somehow it really works when they're together. And I loved that immediately.
Yeah, it's not as odd as you think. I mean, to have them, you know, this episode, they actually have them like riding on horseback from Patience Planet trying to get back to the ship. And it's not, you know, I think it really kind of works as opposed to, say, you know, Star Wars. I think about like Luke on Tatooine, where they had, you know, which was kind of an outpost planet. And there he is with his little space hovercraft tooling around with R2-D2 in the back. And I think it really is surprisingly effective to see, you know, the horses and the spacecraft, that it's not as incongruous as you might think.
This isn't Cowboys and Aliens, you know. This works a lot better than that movie. I think they were able to sort of wed the two genres together well enough that it was still futuristic and yet still very realistic at the same time.
Yeah, I've heard in the past, you know, Star Wars being described as a sort of space Western. And I think with that, it was always a little more subtle. It seems like a better marriage, because they did use the horses and the standoff in the valley, you know, like all of those Western tropes that we're used to seeing. And I'm not a huge Western fan, but as far as the space Western goes, I'm pretty sure I'm a fan, because I've never not liked one of them. So it's all good to me.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of space stories can be like futuristic Westerns, in the sense that it's the new frontier that we're exploring, Star Trek, you know, whatever. But, and you see some of that with the Alliance in Firefly, but then you get the completely other side with the horses. And it's so interesting to see how they bring both of the worlds into this one show.
The other part that they do that was really interesting is the conceptually, the reason, if viewers don't realize, why the Chinese gets incorporated into the series is two reasons. One, Joss Whedon's concept was that eventually on Earth there were several, you know, massive world wars, what have you. And at the end of it, you know, the planet is kind of decimated, as you can imagine, and that the largest population on Earth is Chinese, and that part of Chinese culture would, you know, marry into Western culture. And that's why you'd have things like Kaylee's holding a Chinese parasol, the blouse under her overalls, if you look at it, has Japanese pagodas on it. There's a lot of Asian influence into the things that Inara wears frequently. And then what they did as a practical reason is a lot of the swear words that they use are all Chinese, because, and apparently their pronunciation, when you go online and you look, is kind of off on some of them, but it was their way to get past the censors, that they could swear in Chinese and it wouldn't be a problem. So I thought that was pretty creative on their part. What do you guys think about Joss Whedon's concept as to why the Chinese is incorporated and how he came about that?
I know when I first watched this, I was very confused. I had no idea what was going on. And I was like, wait, what did they just say? I don't think that was English. But once I figured out why they were doing that. It actually makes a lot of sense, and I like his vision of that world sort of, you know, like the Western culture and the Asian culture coming together. Again, it's very realistic, and I like the approach that he took to making this show because it just works so well.
To be honest, a lot of the Asian and Chinese culture stuff was lost on me. I didn't even notice it. I mean, I'm only one episode in, so I'm sure it makes a bigger statement later, but I didn't really notice much of it. I remember the parasol stuff now that you talk about it. I'm like, okay, I get it. But yeah, it didn't really stick out to me. So I mean, they incorporated it well then, because it didn't, like, you know, seem glaringly like out of place or anything.
There's actually a website. I don't even know if it's up anymore, but I'm going to look into it and I'll totally put it in the show notes if it does exist. There was a website that used to be up that was totally dedicated to Firefly Chinese, and what they said, or what they were trying to say, what the phrases meant. And some of them are so funny. I'll definitely put it in the show notes. And it's really fun. I mean, some of them you can kind of figure out, like if they're going, you know, Goram obviously is like a takeoff on goddamn, you can tell. And then other things are made up, like, oh, it's shiny, instead is kind of like them saying, oh, it's cool. Everything's shiny, everything cool. Like, those aren't Chinese. Those are just made up. But there are other ones that are absolutely Chinese phrases.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting little quirk in the show. But then when you think about it, it makes so much sense. So it adds a level of fun, but then it also brings it back to the idea of Earth that was. And it's just really fascinating to delve into the layers of it.
Speaking of layers, one of the things that's really great about the show is all the different relationships that go on. And not just like the romantic or the like unrequited relationships, because really the only relationship that's obviously, you know, of a romantic nature from the get-go is obviously Zoe and Wash. And some of them, there's people who are clearly interested in other people. We'll see how that develops or doesn't develop as the series go on. But beside from that, there are also a lot of other great relationships that are platonic between characters in this series. There's obviously a Mal and Inara relationship. There's the relationship with Jane and Mal. Looking at the other characters coming on, there's the relationship between Kaylee and Mal, and looking at it. How about, like, some, just on this first episode, and obviously we're getting a lot of different passengers on board too. Any particular relationship that was of a platonic nature that really spoke to you guys, that you really were very, very interested in seeing how it would play out?
I actually really loved Kaylee and Wash. Like, just, you know, him counting on her down the engine room and, like, talking it through. And I really hope that they have some sort of interaction coming up. I don't know. But I really did like their kind of rapport between the two of them.
Well, like I said earlier, I absolutely adore Simon and River, their sibling relationship. I was drawn in so quickly by his story of how she went to the school and was being experimented on, and he gave up everything in this amazing life that he had to go rescue her. And I was just so taken by the sacrifice he was making and this beautiful sibling relationship that they have.
My favorite is probably Zoe and Mal. I really like, I don't know, like, she's so loyal to him. And yet, you know, she's married to Wash, which I think is kind of an interesting dynamic, because you would sort of think like Mal and Zoe would be together, but they just don't have that sort of relationship. And I love her sarcasm, and she sort of tells him, you know, what it's like. And the one scene where he says something like, oh, this wasn't a very good idea, or something like that. The one where they're outside and she's like, this wasn't a good idea. And then later he was like this, and she says, thanks for saying that, sir, or something like that.
He says, you were right about this being a bad idea. Thanks for saying, sir.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that one scene where Zoe is just sort of like, or Mal was just saying, you were right to say that this was a bad idea. And she says, thanks for saying that, sir. And, you know, that just sort of give and take sort of relationship. I really enjoy watching that.
I think for me, interestingly enough, who I really, really like this episode a lot is Shepherd Book. I mean, we don't know too much about him yet, but he's just so interesting. Like, he comes on board and he very willingly, you know, wants to share the food that he has with everybody. I think he's a really quick judge of character. For when things start to go bad down in the cargo hold and, you know, the shooting happens and he's trying to talk the Alliance guy out of, you know, he's like, you know, look, before this, you know, he's like, we're a second away from stupid here. Let's just all calm down. And then when the shooting happens and things are going crazy and Jane really just wants to kill the guy, Shepard gets in the way and he's like, not going to happen, not going to move. But I just really love that he's, you know, so early on, I don't know, make his presence known, you know, and sometimes he's going to side either way. He's not always just going to side with one person. He's going to side with what he thinks the right thing to do is. So I'm really fascinated with his relationship with people. And you could kind of see, like, Zoe sort of respected what he did. Like, Zoe was just like, okay, Jane, yeah, just tie him up. Like, Zoe was not like, okay, this is a bad decision. I get it. I get where you're coming from. So I like Shepard a lot. I also really like the relationship between Inara and Kaylee. Like, it's a big sister, a little sister kind of thing. That I thought is just a really, really adorable relationship, because Kaylee is so kind of like sweet and innocent. And Inara just, you know, taking her under her wing. I really love that, too.
Yeah, when she tells Simon that Kaylee is precious to everyone, that's one of my favorite moments in the episode.
How about, like, Mal in general? Like, do we feel like good guy, bad guy? Like, what was your first impression of Mal and this crew? I mean, obviously they're starting as scavengers and we know they're doing it to survive. What do you think makes Mal either a likable or an unlikable character in this first episode, and his crew either likable or unlikable? Because I mean, let's face it, they do certainly shoot people. They definitely, you know, aren't doing things totally on the up and up. And who's to say who is right in what side of the war? I mean, we don't really know what the war is about at this point. What do you think makes Mal and his crew likable or unlikable to viewers?
I think there's a thing with Mal where he's kind of, I mean, he's really self-deprecating and sarcastic, which kind of already makes him someone you kind of like, because he's not taking himself overly seriously. But then he is kind of trying to keep his head down, having been on the losing side. So he's just moving forward and trying to do what he needs to do and just wanting to stay flying. And I find that really fascinating. He's not particularly interested in being right. He just wants to keep flying, keep doing what he's enjoying with the people he cares about. And that, I think that makes him interesting and likable immediately.
Yeah, I don't really see Mal or his crew as good guys or bad guys. They're kind of in a gray area. They toe the line a little bit. And I think in general, Mal is a good guy, and we see this a lot more later on, but they're opportunistic, you know? They have to survive, and they pretty much do what they have to do. And I think what makes them more on the side of good than bad is that they don't really want to hurt anybody. They won't kill anybody unless they have to. But, you know, on the flip side of that, they will kill people if they have to. So that's why it's sort of a gray area, I think.
Yeah, so far, the crew kind of fits into the Fred and George Weasley role, if that makes any sense. Like, the lovable miscreants that they do what they have to do to get done what needs to get done, but they might not always follow all the rules. And yeah, that's kind of where I've kind of fit them into, you know, into the show. As far as Mal goes, my first impression was just like, he's very authoritative. You know, it's easy to see that he's captain of this vessel and that all of them respect him and all of them, you know, have a reverence for him, but he also knows how to kind of be light and, you know, throw it back. So I like Mal. I'm interested to kind of get more of how he got to be the way he is. I don't know how much we get, but yeah, no, I he's not really a bad guy or a good guy or anything like that. I just kind of see him fitting in the middle there in that gray area Karen was talking about.
I think the point of the episode where I decided that I liked Mal for the first time, like I was like, okay, I could go with this guy, is when they're all sitting around the dinner table and it's obvious that Kaylee has the hots for Simon. And then Jane makes that crack about Kaylee's just upset that he's not a gynecologist, and Kaylee just is just horribly embarrassed. And Mal goes down on Jane saying, you need to keep a civil tongue in your head. And Jane's like, oh, come on. Yeah, right. Whatever. Give me a break. We all know that Kaylee's got the hots. And then Mal's like, you're going to leave the table right now. Just that he like defended Kaylee, and you know, it would have been really easy for it to be like a guy's moment, or to just chuckle it off, or somebody just to change the conversation and pretend it doesn't happen. But instead, he decides to confront the guy who's, you know, his muscle at the table in front of everybody, and be like, yeah, no, this doesn't happen on my ship. I mean, I thought that was really cool. That was the moment I decided I really liked him. Looking at some of the other characters, we have, I think, probably one of the biggest characters that pops out this time, because, I mean, so much in the action is set in motion around him, is Simon, and then with River. When we're introduced to Simon at first, and there's this big mysterious box, like, what did you guys think was in the box? As far as, I mean, we eventually find it's, you know, surprise, it's a River in the box. What did you guys think prior to it being River? What did you think was in the box?
I had no idea. Like, especially not that there was a person inside. I was completely, like, taken off guard. I think I just kind of assumed it was something, not necessarily, like, drugs or anything horribly bad or something that you wouldn't want on the ship, but something that that the Alliance might have been looking for that would then cause an issue. That's kind of what I thought. I didn't know that there was a person hiding in the box, though. That was definitely a surprise.
Yeah, that was kind of the last thing I was expecting to be in the box. I honestly had no idea and didn't even really think about it. It was the first time I watched it. I just went, what could that be? What could that be? What do you mean it's a person? I'm so confused.
Never, ever thought it was going to be a person. Same thing. I was like, it's some sort of contraband. And then when, you know, it's kind of the revelation as to who and what, you know, kind of her backstory is, and you can kind of see that every single person on that vessel, or at least certainly gives off the impression that, okay, we get it. We're all, for one reason or another, we all don't support the Alliance for one reason or another, and you don't really know what people's reasonings are, but you can see this, you know, their very human reaction to Simon and his sister as not wanting them, you know, gone from the ship, and you can see they have sympathy towards them in some fashion, one way or another. Looking at some of the other relationships too, we mentioned Jane just a second ago and how Mal confronted Jane at the table. And there's also, you know, an allusion to the fact that Jane could have sided with the Alliance agent and he didn't, because, you know, there wasn't enough, you know, money in the deal there. Do you get the impression, like in this first episode, that Jane has a price? Or do you think Jane is loyal to Mal? Or who do you think Jane is loyal to based on this first episode?
My immediate impression was that Jane is first and foremost loyal to Mal, and then is loyal to, like, the crew as a whole. Like, if Mal gave him orders that went against everything else, I think he would follow Mal before worrying about anything else. And so, you know, for that reason, maybe that's why I'm not as fond of him yet, is because, you know, I love characters like Kaylee and Wash and Zoe, that it's like, it's tough to think that he might not value them as much as he seems to value Mal. But yeah, that was my, like, initial impression of Jane.
I thought it was interesting how they kind of set it up for you to be really unsure about what he's gonna do, because when he's with his sniper rifle, he's training it on Mal for a bit, and you know, you realize eventually that he's just watching it go down, but you're thinking, oh my God, is he going to shoot him? And I think they do it really well, where you're left with a lot of doubt about him. And I do think they set it up that there could be a price, because he is Mal, or not Mal, Jane, kind of, you get the impression, enjoys kind of the chaos. And while he likes Mal and respects him, I think is most interested in where he's going to find some action. And if that would be somewhere else, he might be looking there.
I agree, Caitlin. I mean, I've watched this series a couple of times and the movie a couple of times, and I still don't know where Jane's loyalties lie. You know, I mean, he's still such a back and forth kind of character. And I think if we had gotten more episodes or something, maybe his storyline would have been played out a little bit more. But there's definitely that huge seed of doubt that they plant in your mind right from the first episode.
I wonder if even Jane knows, honestly. Yeah.
It probably changes depending on the day.
Yeah, I mean, and Jane is not the brightest bulb on the tree, really, when it comes down to it. Yeah, you know, he's just really not. So I think that's part of it, too, is that, you know, sometimes people are really intelligent and you understand why they're going to make a choice to either stay with somebody or betray somebody. But you just get the sense that Jane is, like I said, not the brightest bulb on the tree. So you kind of wonder, is he going to analyze a situation and how is he going to jump down on that situation? Because he might not really fully understand all the wheels that are in motion. Plus, he also has made it really clear that, like, money is definitely a big thing for him. Like, you know, he's there. He's hired hand. He's there to get paid, you know, and wants to continue to get paid a decent sum. So, you know, is he totally at sale for the highest bidder, or do you have to offer him more? It's an interesting concept that will be fun to see how it plays out. One of the other things that's really kind of interesting is Inara as the companion, which, you know, I guess you could call it a high class call girl is what she basically comes down to. The different spin that they throw on it here is that she decides, or companions decide, whether they want a client or not, and that client is like a high class client. It's not, basically, you have to be worthy of that companion wanting, you know, to service you, I guess, is what they do with it. What did you guys think about, I mean, it certainly is like a Western, like, archetype to have, you know, the madam kind of character around. What do you guys think of their take on the companion and Inara as the companion?
I love how it got flipped upside down, the idea, because in kind of our general culture, that is very low class, looked down upon. But in this culture, it, you know, Mal says that to even get onto certain planets, you have to have a companion on board. So they're obviously well respected. And while Mal doesn't respect the work, he understands that other people do. And I think that's really fascinating that they decided to twist that. So I was really intrigued by it, and then intrigued by Inara herself.
My like initial read on Inara was that I love her little ship. Like, there's just something about her little, I don't even, is it's like an annex or something that like can separate, I don't know, but
yeah,
that whole thing,
shuttle. It's a separate shuttle.
Yeah, I love her little shuttle. Like, it's so incredibly different from anything you see in any other space movie or whatever. There's never a room quite like that that would be its own shuttle. Like, that just hit me really. I was like, that's awesome. And I really like her, and I love her interactions so far, especially with Kaylee, like we talked about a little bit ago. But I'm interested to see what other roles she plays, like how, if she's like a catalyst for more that happens later or something like that.
I love that there are so many parts to Inara that are completely incongruous, that just don't seem like they go together. Like, you obviously have her role as the companion, and she's this professional and everything, but at the same time, she's completely able to be wounded by this guy saying, yeah, your clock's probably rigged, and, you know, like, he kind of devalues her there, and you can see that, you know, for somebody who's a seasoned professional, apparently that still hurts to be spoken about that way. And then you have the fact that she is on Mal's ship, and that this is sort of a mutually beneficial relationship, that she's getting to travel. I guess that's the benefit to her. And Mal then can get into ports, but at the same time, he'll call her a whore and she'll stand up to him, but it's not, you know, a really, like, violent standing up. Like, she still needs the relationship to be on the vessel. But at the same time, she's not, like, she's not slutty. Like, she's not trying to, like Shepard obviously is a religious man, and she shows a respect to this man who's a religious man. She also, like, doesn't hold herself, like, too high and mighty over somebody like Kaylee, who is, you know, a really kind of simple tomboy. I mean, Inara is incredibly glamorous compared to her. I mean, she's just such a different puzzle of incongruities. And then you even see glimmers of her with Mal when they think they're going to be boarded by the Reavers. He's like, you get every civilian on your shuttle and you get out of here. And you can see that, even though, you know, Mal had called her a whore not an hour before, now he's talking about, you've got to live, you've got to get out of here, that he does care about her, and that she's, you know, kind of reciprocating that too. So she's such, I mean, I think that's what compels me with her, is she's so many different things that don't seem to go together in a stereotype of what the, you know, the madam would be. I think that's what I really like about her.
I agree with that. And I also think, you get the impression that because companions are in kind of high demand for, especially for the ships, that she could find another ship if she wanted to. Like, there's nothing keeping her there, really. Like, if it was really bothering her that much, she would leave. But there is something tethering her to this ship, and that's really interesting to think about.
It's cool. Actually, you know, we mentioned it a second ago, the idea of the Reavers, which, I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that this will come up again in this series, but what a cool concept of a villain. You know, it's kind of like the outer space boogeyman, or somebody like Simon, who has lived his life in Alliance culture, and to him, this was like the story of the boogeyman, of these crazy people from the outer rim planets, and to find out, no, 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 everything that you've been told about your nightmares is absolutely true. I love Zoe's comment about Reavers, what you've heard is true. If they get on board here, they will rape us to death, they will eat our flesh, and then they will take our skins and make clothes of them, and if we're lucky, they'll do it in that order. And you can see the fear on everyone's face, like, who knows? Like, you see it on Mal's face, you see it on Wash's face, you see the terror on Inara's face. Like, she absolutely, like, everybody who knows that it's real and it's not the boogeyman, the level of terror is unbelievable. How did you guys feel about, just conceptually, what a Reaver is? And was that successfully executed in a first pilot episode?
Zoe's line just sends shivers down my spine every single time. I mean, Reavers scare the crap out of me. And but, you know, they are a great villain. They're sort of, and it's funny because there are a lot of villains in the show. There's a lot of people who come in and go out and that sort of thing. And the Reavers are just one of them, but they just stand out so well, and they're so scary, and they're just of your nightmares that, I mean, as terrifying as they are, I really love the idea of them, and I love, I guess, how real that terror is, even to just the audience members.
They remind me of those urban legends where they have, like, the woodsmen stuck in a snowstorm or that end up eating each other kind of thing, which are absolutely terrifying. And I just thought that was so interesting to make that kind of connection on these backwoods planets that we can kind of relate to with our own urban legends.
Yeah, for me, Zoe's line, just when she said that, having no idea what these things are, I just, like, my jaw dropped. I was like, oh my god, like, we're in trouble. That's really all that went through my mind when they introduced him.
What I like about it too is one of the other shows I'm a huge fan of is The Walking Dead. And in The Walking Dead, you have the zombies who, you know, are cannibalistic humans, and they're just going to come at you, you know, with no morality, no thought process. They're just going to come after you. And in a sense, the Reavers are more scary because, you know, the walkers, you can outrun them. You can kill them easily. These things have their own ship. Like, they obviously have some sort of intellect to come after you. So to me, they're like really super scary zombies, you know, with ships and, you know, and, you know, cunning and, you know, intellect. And that makes, I think, the villain that much more terrifying.
Right. I mean, they're essentially people without their humanity. And considering what humans with humanity are capable of, that just makes them all that much scarier.
Why don't we talk about some of the quotes in this episode? We've sort of been tap dancing around some of the quotes in the episode, especially a show that's written by Joss Whedon, because he is such a brilliant, brilliant writer, and he can put together a sentence with five words and say more than another writer could say in an entire paragraph. Does anybody have any favorite quotes that happened in this episode that stick out in your mind?
The one I find myself quoting all the time is when Wash is playing with those little dinosaurs and he's like, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. And then the other, mom, my laugh is an evil laugh. It just cracks me up.
Yeah, I like that one too.
I loved Mal's line, this is not my best day ever, when, like, he's down there with Dobson and Simon, and the guy's, like, drawn his gun and he's standing there, and then he also says, I think you ought to get on the ground, son. Man seems a mite twitchy. Just for something about that whole scene just got me. I loved it.
Yeah, I love the way that Mal talks and just, you know, his general dialect and everything is always really great. One of my favorite lines is between Zoe and Mal, and this is right after they took the people on board, and they're obviously afraid that maybe one of them is going to find their stash in the hull of the ship. And Mal just says, if anyone gets nosy, shoot them. And Zoe goes, shoot them? And he says, politely. It's just... he's just so funny. And yeah, the dialogue and all the writing is just so fantastic. The show is so quotable.
The one that I really love is when Inara comes into the hold and she's meeting Shepard and everything, and they're having this banter go back and forth about her being the ambassador, and he embarrasses her in front of Shepard and everything. And then he says to her, how's business? And she says, none of yours. I love that. It just, you know, it just lets, you know, lets him know where he stands. The other one that is when Simon is talking about River and how he's, you know, smart and he did all these things, but that compared to River, he's nothing. He says that River was intellectually gifted. He goes, in fact, she is a gift. I thought that was one of the best expressed quotes of the series, actually.
I also really like when they're getting ready to go see patients, and I forget who says it, but says, she still has the advantage over us. And Mal says, everyone always does. That's what makes us special. And I just thought, that is the show in a nutshell.
You know, or and Wash has one too about, you know, honey, if things were normal, we'd be in jail. You know, he's like, you know, if everything was right in the world, we'd be locked up. We're smugglers, honey. You know, he's like, everything's not supposed to be normal. I love that. That's pretty cool.
I just have to point out how much I love the, like, dining area. Like, on the ship, it's so homey. And in Westerns, like, the kitchen tends to be, like, a central part of the set. Like, there's, you know, Main Street and showdowns on Main Street. But the homestead and the kitchen is always, like, it grounds the show, and I love their whole, it's so cute and homey and not spaceshipy that I loved it. It just struck me as one of those things that I will keep, like, remember about watching it the first time.
It's so funny you say that, because in rewatching the episode this time, I guess I never noticed this before, but there's, like, little flowery wallpaper going up the side of the kitchen. I'm like, I was like, oh my God, I'm sitting there and I'm looking at it and I'm going, so I'm thinking Kaylee hung that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, who else wallpapered? You know?
Yeah, that was my first impression. I was like, wow, it looks like Kaylee got a hold of this room. Like, she was like, no, it's the kitchen. It's going to be cute. Like, I'm going to fix it. Like, that was my impression too.
And the guys just let it stand.
Yeah, and the guys just let it stand. They haven't been like, oh, what did you do to the kitchen? You know, they let it stand, which is cool.
I was going to say, she's probably the one person Mal can't say no to for something like that.
It's a good point. And you get the feeling that she is. She's just so lovable. Like Mal even goes to, like, insult her quasi. Like, there are some days you just want to, you know, I forget how he puts it about Kaylee being cheerful and you just want to, like, staple her mouth or something. And she's like, I love my captain. You know, she's just so completely lovable that you know he would, you know, do anything for her. You really get that impression.
Yeah, there's that innocence about her that none of them seem ready to ruin. They just want her to preserve it as long as possible.
What makes her lovable is she just does wear her heart on the sleeve. Like, it does not occur to her, I feel like, to, you know, be cagey about anything. She just says everything the way it is or how she feels. Like, even, like, with Shepard coming aboard, she's like, and Shepard's agreed to, you know, help me with the meal and, like, say a prayer or something. And she's like, no, because it's not a problem. It's fine. It's not a problem. You know, and she's looking like, please, please, Dad, tell me it's not a problem. You know, she's just so, you know, innocent with everybody, or just like, you know, even when she's shot, like, everyone's so mad. Why is everyone so mad? You know, that's Kaylee. She just, you know, it doesn't occur to her to beat around the bush or guile. She'll just say what she feels. Next portion of our program, we just wanted to give a shout out to some listener feedback that we had coming in. Again, just to remind you guys how you can leave us some of this feedback, you can shoot us a tweet at our Twitter handle, which is re_watchable. You can also email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, or you can put a comment on our posts on Hypable, Hypable.com. So let's just kick it off now with some of our listener feedback from our last episode.
First one we have here is from Alice Parker, and she just asks, how do you think Jane answered the lawman's question? Do you think he agreed? Was he lying when he said the money wasn't good enough just because the plan went sour? And this is an excellent question, and I don't know if I really have an answer for it, because like I said before, Jane is so hard to read. I'm not really quite sure which side he really is on, even after all this time, but I definitely wouldn't put it past him to say the money wasn't good enough just because the plan went sour. So what do you guys think about that?
I think the money had to be good enough and he has to have a way out. I think Jane is about preserving Jane. And even if he betrayed Mal, how is he getting off the ship? I mean, there's a certain practicality to it. Okay, so he betrays Mal. Well, there's six more people on the ship, and can he fly it? So aside from the money not being good enough, how in the hell was he going to get out of there? Was there a decent escape plan? So I think like Jane may be more about the money, but he also, he's a little stupid, but he's not so stupid that he can't figure out that he's got to protect number one.
Yeah, I agree with that. Jane is about Jane. The money is about Jane, but if there's always going to be more to it than just the money if self-preservation is involved. Our second feedback comes from Monica Reyes. She said, this show is pure magic. And Jimmy, even though this show has been off the air for 10 years and didn't even produce an entire season, this is by far my favorite TV show. The difference from this TV show and every other canceled TV show is that even though it died, it didn't stay dead. I'm so excited for those of you watching this for the first time. I hope you see the magic the show displays and gain the excitement of watching episodes one after the other. And I think that's a great point, that it really took off after it was done and had became such a big thing. And we're still finding things to talk about today and doing this podcast, and people are still finding it for the first time, and more generations hopefully will be finding it after.
Yeah, I mean, even the show has remained popular through all sorts of conventions. I mean, any sci-fi convention, you know, all of these actors who have gone on into different things. I guess the most prominent right now is Nathan Fillion being the lead in Castle. But that's not to say all of these other actors haven't had major roles in other shows. They've done lots of sci-fi conventions, and they always get asked Firefly conventions. They always get asked Firefly questions. It's still so popular in people's mind. I know for me, I attend Comic-Con in San Diego every year. And later on in the series, this isn't really a spoiler, but there's like a signature kind of hat that Jane wears at one point. There is not a day at Comic-Con that you can't walk by and find people wearing a Jane hat. I mean, they all wear it. And people, you know, cosplay the Firefly characters all the time at different sci-fi conventions. I mean, I would totally, like, if I was going to, you know, have to dress up as a character for one of my favorite series, like, absolutely without question, Firefly would be, like, one of the very things top of my list that I would choose to dress up as if that was, you know, something I was going to do to attend a convention.
Which character, Laura?
Oh, as much, yeah, it's too hard to choose. I think probably because, I mean, I'm not gorgeous like Mirena Baccarin, who plays Inara. I mean, she's stunningly beautiful. I mean, I don't know that I could credibly pull off Inara, but I think I would probably dress up as Kaylee. I would definitely dress up as Kaylee.
Well, speaking of dressing up, you even have Nathan Fillion dressing up as Mal in Castle. There are Firefly references all over the place in Castle. You just can't get away from it.
I have to say, he's also really good. Every year at Comic-Con, there's a booth called the California Browncoats, and they basically have all this Firefly memorabilia. And every year, Nathan Fillion comes on down, and he will sign merchandise down there, and part of the proceeds goes to charity. And he is so good to the fandom because he's like, I would not be where I am today without the support of the Firefly fans. Like, every single one of those actors is so grateful to the Firefly fan base. And I don't know that a lot of actors are always like that. You know, a lot of actors are not very loyal to, like, the fans of what once launched their career, but every single one of those guys is. And in fact, I was just referencing Comic-Con a moment ago. This past summer, they had the 10-year reunion Firefly panel. You couldn't get into that room. I mean, it was packed, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house. I mean, you had all of these guys getting weepy over, you know, what an amazing experience this show was that lasted one season 10 years ago. And that just tells you, I think, how incredibly good the show is. Well, thank you everybody for listening to our second episode of Rewatchable. We're going to be back in about 2 weeks' time, having rewatched the next episode in the Firefly series, which is called The Train Job, which is a good old-fashioned train heist, only space cowboy style. So we'll get to see a lot more of these characters and learn how they function as they're pulling one of their sort of standard gigs, which is, you know, kind of their Robin Hood-esque of robbing from the rich and stealing from the poor. And we'll see how it all works out on the train job. So until we see you guys next time, I'm Laura.
I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Kristen.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.